Roz, you've had to go through, I suppose, a journey of self-discovery. Do you want to tell us a bit about that, please?
It was back in 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. when my gender dysphoria that I've experienced since my childhood was pretty much raging. And it was a case of feeling in a certain sense inside myself that I had to act on it. And so, yeah, my change is that I have transitioned genders. My old name, which I don't really have a problem mentioning, was Ross, and I thought I'd make it easier for those around me, and I became Roz.
And I think there's something nice about that. There's like continuity because you're basically the same person.
Yes, indeed. It wasn't my goal to start a completely new life. I wanted to live authentically as me. And in doing so, of course, when you're changing genders, there's a whole lot of those roles in society that change with you. But I still wanted to be a parent to my children and still enjoy the family that I'd built up with my wife, and but just enable myself to be free of the gender dysphoria and to live a fulfilling life.
Can you tell us about your childhood or, you know, familial structure and influences that you grew up while basically dealing with your identity like this?
I'm an adoptee. I was adopted a number of weeks after birth. So that was in the 60s, and adopted into a family where my older brother was an adoptee as well. And in the 60s through to the 70s, there wasn't a lot of information around. And what you saw on television was like the Benny Hill show or the Paul Hogan show, basically men seen mocking us. Yeah, mocking people who felt like I did. In my youth, I remember trying to castrate myself with a couple of the big postman rubber bands. I was unsuccessful because of the fear of what would happen if my parents found out as to whether they would be so upset with me I might end up in an orphanage or something. And it was an unfounded fear because I came out to my mum, and whilst that coming out was quite difficult for her to accept, she's now one of my greatest supporters. And one of her biggest disappointments is, why didn't I tell her sooner?
You had a double-edged prong in the sense that you were struggling with this identity and also then concerned that you'd be rejected by your adoptive parents. So that, I suppose, would add another layer to the anxiety about what you were dealing with?
Oh, certainly. Look, adoptees often have a great deal of anxiety about attachment. We have emotional memories from before childbirth, and there is a separation from our first mum. And so we then bond with our adoptive parents. You know, we're aware that there has been a separation, and so some adoptees tend to rebel and others tend to be the good quiet kid, and I fit the latter. I was a good quiet kid. I didn't want the rejection. I didn't want to lose my parents or their love. And so you tend to mould into however their ethics and beliefs are. My parents did not have a great deal of Christian belief, but when I was 17, I ended up involved with a church. I met some people who were adamant about God working miracles and healing and all the rest of it, and I thought I was disordered to feel like I wanted to be the opposite gender. And so, yeah, I went into a fundamentalist church where basically if you transitioned, you lost your place in heaven and you're going to head to hell. And in my case, I tried to do the best I could, including, you know, getting married, having the church marriage and so on, without exploring my sexuality beforehand either. And so not only was I denying my gender, I really didn't have a clue about my sexuality back then either.
It's really interesting that you went with a fundamentalist version of that as well. Do you have any insight why you think you were initially attracted to that?
Yeah, look, there was a promise of a miracle healing. So I was at the point of part of me wanted to race off to Sydney because the only thing I knew of was like lay girls. And I feared I wouldn't be a good enough dancer. And I knew it would break my parents' heart. I was studying at university at night and a trade in the day. And so it was a case of, do I throw all my sustainability and risk whatever income I can eke out, which may well have included sex work back then. So that was sort of the choices I was faced with. So I was searching for a cure. And look, 30 years of prayer and life in the church, and there was no miracle cure except to transition, and that meant leaving the church. Fundamentalist, not only the miracle side, but there's also the rigidity of the social circle and the beliefs. And so it was a psychological constrainment. Yeah, what went from a relatively free thought, went from someone who thought evolution was okay to believing in creationism, was, I guess, it also prevented me from facing the reality that I needed to transition. Because in the 80s, for many, transitioning appeared like a death sentence.
But there was light at the end of the tunnel for you, or at least a glimmer. Roz, how and when did you decide to face up to who you are and become that person?
The reality was that my expectation after becoming a Christian as a teenager was that the intense desires and the thoughts about being a woman would leave me. I can't think of a day where I didn't want to be a woman, where I didn't bat away some sort of thought about it. And I guess that as time went on, with the advent of the internet, I learnt more about it being a valid condition, a reality of how people are made. Yeah, in 2011, it was a case of looking back on that. And the reality was that the path I'd chosen wasn't delivering the results for me to grow as a person. And so I came out to Kathy and said, hey, I think this is how I feel, because I hadn't actually fessed up to my wife. And so I said, this is how I feel. And Kathy said, well, let's check this out. And she was very supportive. And so that first step was encouraging. But my first impressions when Kathy helped me put makeup on, that I looked like a man in drag, and I didn't want to be a man in drag. I wanted to see me, the female me. So it took some patience as well to work through that self-image and be comfortable in who I am today as well.
And did you want to talk more about, I suppose, the positive effects of becoming the woman that you were supposed to be?
In 2012, it was actually TDAW, Transgender Day of Remembrance, November 20th, 2012, and work was very supportive of me and was already living full-time as a woman, and that was the last thing. I had a desire to undo the masculinization in my facial structure, so I had facial feminization surgery in 2014. So that gave me myself, and people could start to see me as Roz. So around that time, I wanted to have my gender reassignment surgery or my gender confirmation surgery. So I had that gender confirmation surgery mid last year, and feeling very much whole and complete in myself now. And yeah, every day is just another day as a woman. So life for me is pretty typical. Maybe the only atypical thing at the moment for me is that I stayed in the engineering field. Had considered changing fields, but I had a family to support, and the realization that women are quite competent in engineering and in electrical work, and even though we're a small percentage, it feels quite good, and just continue being me.
Thank you so much for talking with us, Roz.